Well, good afternoon, Juno. It's about 5 seconds before 3 o'clock. Pat Moore, your host today for Juno Afternoon. I have a great lineup of guests today. Phil Paramore will be here to talk to us about the guest who's coming, John Elliott, who's coming as part of the UAS Music in Motion series. He's going to be playing at the UAS Rec Center, where Phil is the manager. And we'll have some representatives from the Juno Retired Teachers Association drop in to tell us about that organization. Jesse Post will be here from JEDC to talk about Project Homeless Connect. Pat Murphy will be dropping in to tell us about his Saturday concert at the Rookery. And Heather Beatty will tell us about the Click Give program, hard to say on the radio. Weather looks like this patchy fog that we had this morning is going to come back this evening, and we'll have probably an accumulation of up to 2 inches of snow tonight, most of it in the Mendenhall Valley, lows 27 to 35. National Native News is next, and then we'll get to our guests. Stay tuned.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Northern Ontario chief has ended her more than a month-long hunger strike and asks First Nations to stick together. Chief Teresa Spence ended it after the Assembly of First Nations and opposition parties agreed to take up her cause. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
After 44 days of living on fish broth and tea, the chief of the Attawapiskat Reserve had her first solid food after she was checked out by a doctor. She began her hunger strike with a demand that the Prime Minister and the Governor General agree to meet with her. She wants a new relationship between First Nations and Stephen Harper's government, and she wants Harper to honor existing treaties. Although there was no agreement from the government, pleas from other First Nations leaders and pressure from within her own community in Northern Ontario persuaded Spence to end her protest.
It's time to really stay together, no matter what hardship that we go through. And what no matter what the government, intends to do to us, to divide us.
Earlier, a spokesman for the chief said change had to happen, not only to protect treaty rights, but for all First Nations communities that live in third world conditions. And the main message was that the end of the hunger strike did not mean the end of the fight. Spence had become one of the main symbols of the Idle No More protest movement that has swept across Canada in recent weeks. The movement shows no sign of letting up as Native leaders demand the Harper government get rid of its omnibus legislation that they say threatens their treaty rights. Meanwhile, the head of the Assembly of First Nations says the Idle No More movement helped bring widespread attention to the long-standing struggles of Aboriginal people by piercing the consciousness of the country. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A Native American veteran supports ending the ban on women in combat roles. Julia Kelly is vice president of the Native American Women Warriors, an all-Native American women color guard.
I thought it was about time. The policy itself was a little archaic. With Iraq and Afghanistan has changed in the way that the women have done their job and where they're positioned at and their roles that they play.
The Pentagon announced Thursday plans to lift the ban, which will open jobs. Opposition includes questioning the physical standards of women. Kelly, a 28-year Army veteran whose service includes tours in the Middle East, disagrees. She says women pull their own weight and there's no added risk to women when it comes to injury or death. And Kelly says changes in policy will help women in Indian country.
And Native women have always been our protectors. They have always been protectors with their children, with their elders. They've always been that way. So to me, the policy is just going to enhance that with Native women of how they're raised and protecting their family. So that kind of contradicts some of their, saying the men will, the women won't be able to, but I disagree with that.
The Crow woman says she was in tears hearing the news because women could be recognized and receive awards for their service in combat units. President Obama has shown support while some senators have voiced caution. The Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma is raising the salaries of more than 200 healthcare employees to better compete with urban areas. Nurse practitioners, physician assistants, doctors, and dentists will see an 11% pay increase by February 10th. It's part of the tribe's plan to improve healthcare quality and access. On this day in 1968, the U.S. Indian Claims Commission decreed that Mescalero Apaches in New Mexico should receive more than $8 million for lands taken from them in the 1800s. They declined because the money couldn't be shared with other Apache bands. A future ruling changed that. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. This is a court-ordered legal notice for Native Americans. The Cobell Indian Trust Settlement is approved. If you believe you might be included in the settlement, you need to file a claim by March 1, 2013 to get a payment. Information is available at the website indiantrust.com or by calling 1-800-961-6109. That's indiantrust.com or 1-800-961-6109. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
6 minutes after 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. We're in the middle of Juneau afternoon. Pat Moore, your host today. My next guest is, this is always kind of a cool thing because he's a personal friend, and we get to talk together a little bit on the radio here, which I don't get that chance to do very often. Phil Paramore is here. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Pat.
Phil is going to talk a little bit with us about a singer-songwriter who's coming to UAS, and this is an unusual venue for UAS. You've had acts up there before, but not as part of this series.
Right. The Sound in Motion series that Katie Bosler puts together every year is generally takes place on campus at the Egan Library Wing or the auditorium or something like that. This year she's going to utilize the UAS Rec Center, and the area she's using is the portion right out in front. If you've been there before, you know what the large glass windows that look out. It's this, we call it the SAC, the Student Activity Center.
Yeah.
The SAC for short. It's a nice little venue. And
it is. I don't think a lot of people from the community have been in there, unless they've come out to a UAS event of some kind.
I'm always surprised how few have. People come out there and say, I've never been in here before. And I was like, well, and it's been open for 7 years now.
Yeah, but you have a stage and a screen and pool tables. It's really set up pretty nicely.
It is nice. It's a lively little venue, too. As far as sound goes, it sounds really good acoustically. So we've had quite a few really good performances there, and several people have come through over the years, but it seems like a quiet little secret. People aren't as likely to make that little drive out there to the back loop and come out to the rec center. So working with Katie is hopefully will help us in a couple of ways. It will help us to promote our venue, the UAS Student Rec Center, and give the performer a nice, lively venue. And it's really it's small, and the focus is on the performer. And there's not a lot of noise in the background. There's not a lot of activity. There's not a lot of distraction from the music itself. So it's a nice environment.
You know, one of the reasons I love radio is because it's an intimate environment. It's you and me talking and somebody listening to us, you know. And that room and that venue has that same quality. It's kind of like John Elliott is going to come up here and sing to me. You know?
Exactly.
And if I'm sitting like 20 feet away from him, that's exactly where we're at here.
Right. Yeah. And exactly. And so that environment sets the stage for his performance. And as we were discussing earlier a little bit, his music is a storytelling type of music.
Yeah, Elliott is really interesting. He reminds me as much of anything else of Paul Simon, and other people have compared him to that. He's got the same high tenor range, but the thing about it is his phraseology is real similar to that, and when I listened to some takes of his music, incidentally, all of his music is available almost in full on his website. If you're curious about who you're going to be going to listen to, Elliott has really sampled himself on the internet. So I would encourage anyone to kind of take the course before they go out and see the prof. You know.
Yeah, he's very accessible, and that's how we kind of found him. Katie actually found him online and really liked his stuff. Yeah. And if you go online, you'll see why. I mean, you've listened to it, huh, Pat?
I have, and one of the things that I'm pretty sure, I know how Paul Simon used to compose. He would write a prose poem. He and Art Garfunkel, working together, would write a prose poem, pass it back and forth, and they rhymed it once they had a tune they would rewrite it to rhyme it. And I, when I heard his lyrics, they're so dense with ideas that I think he probably does the same thing. I suspect that they occur first as poems, and then when they come to the music is really the second part of it, I suspect.
That could very well be. I believe he has a degree in English and possibly an advanced degree in English in literature. So he's going to actually go to the academic department and make a visit to some of the classes there and sit in on those. And he's going to do a little singer-songwriter workshop up at the Housing Lodge as well.
Is that just open to students? Or
the Housing Lodge portion, I think, is technically open to students. The best thing to do would be to call the lodge up there, and if they had enough seats to accommodate them, they would probably welcome people from the public in. But I think it's students first, and the lodge does have a limited capacity.
But the public is definitely invited to the concert in the rec.
Right, absolutely.
And there's no charge for admission, right?
No, there isn't. Let's see, for Sound in Motion, students and... students, staff, and faculty would be free, and it's $5 for everyone.
Oh, $5. Okay. Yeah. Because of the nature of the event, I think.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Because there are, you're bringing these folks up. There's costs involved in one.
Right. Exactly. How it is in Juneau, and particularly with airfares, the way they are.
Yeah.
It's not getting any less expensive.
I hear all of that.
But yeah, that's part of the Sound in Motion series, and that's going to be Friday, February 1st at 7 p.m.
Okay.
And then afterwards, the rec center itself it's our first Friday, and so there will be an art exhibit there by a local artist.
Oh, okay.
And there'll be some refreshments and things of that nature as well. So, is it all right if I talk a little bit about the Sound in Motion series?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. So Katie Bosler puts together the Sound in Motion series. Of course, you know Katie Bosler's a public relations person extraordinaire for the university, and she has a lot to do with this station, the K2 stations as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so
she hosts for a while. She was hosting the Monday version of Juneau Afternoon. Yeah.
Right. So John Elliott is the first of three consecutive Friday events in her series, and March 1st will be a Global Lens series film, and this film is called The Finger, and it's an Australian film, and that will be...
I thought it was Argentinian.
I'm sorry, Argentinian. Yeah,
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 Argentinian.
Australian.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, good. And
different
then,
country.
right. And then, let's see... April 5th, Irene Muller and her band, and I think Sammy Burroughs might be playing with Irene, I'm not sure, but Irene's going to come out and play. So those are all going to be at the UAS Rec Center. So if you haven't been out, come check it out. It's a great little venue. It's really intimate. The sound is outstanding, and the performers we're getting in this little series working with Katie are really first-rate performers, and I think people really enjoy them if they come out and give them a listen.
Well, not to take anything away from the university's thing, but John, while he's here, I understand, has also agreed to do a concert down at the Rookery on February 2nd.
Right, absolutely.
So that's at 7 p.m. So.
Right. You know, as you said, a part of taking care of the business end of it, to put a couple of gigs together and make enough money to make it worthwhile to come into Juneau, and then I think he's going to travel a little bit around in Alaska as well and do some gigs.
Well, I hope so.
We
can't let him come up here and not write at least two songs about Alaska.
Right. Absolutely. He has to travel around enough to get inspired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The website comes up if you Google John Elliott, but if you want the actual website, it's the Hereafter Is Here, all one word, .com. That's the name of his latest album and also the title of his concert here in town. And then /albums. But the simple way to do it, rather than trying to memorize web addresses off the radio, is just to Google John Elliott, singer-songwriter, and you'll have him in an instant.
Yeah.
And as I said, his whole body of work is sitting up there on the Internet. So you've got access to just a huge amount of him before you go see him in person. And I think that'll convince anybody who listens that they better go see him in person.
Yeah, you'll see. He's an accomplished guy. And as you said, his stuff is dense, and he's a really beautiful singer. So, I'm really looking forward to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, Phil, thanks so much for coming up
and
telling
us about it. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You bet.
Thank you.
17 minutes and 30 seconds after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. A quick look at this weather forecast. What we're talking about here is that tonight we'll see patchy fog, scattered rain and snow showers in the evening, and those become more numerous throughout the night and eventually wind up being snow showers, mainly north of downtown Juneau, with snow accumulations of 1 to 2 inches, the highest amounts out in the Mendenhall Valley. So if you know where your snow shovel is, you might, you know, pick it up and move it closer to the front door so that you can get out in the morning. Lows 27 to 35, southeast winds 10 miles per hour, and then Saturday rain and snow. Looks like it might be a weekend to find your cross-country skis, strap them on, and go out to the back loop road and ski around a little bit. I have three gentlemen in the studio with me here who are from the Juneau Retired Educators Association, which is part of the ACREA, Alaska Retired Educators Association. So with me here are Mel Hirsch, Jim Carroll, and Jerry Patterson. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So tell us about the Juneau Retired Educators Association. What kind of, I assume that you must all be former teachers.
Right.
Actually, yes, the three of us are, but to be a member of it, that's not necessary to be a classroom teacher. We have people that have worked in the Department of Education, been on a school board here. Marie Darlin, for instance, she was a school board member and been involved in education. So it's really like educators, it's not all teachers, really.
Okay.
And we meet once a month. It's the third Monday, and usually in the wintertime, like around now, we have luncheons. It's a light out when people can drive to the restaurant or hotel where we're going to have a meeting. Hmm. And then when it's probably in next month or so, we start having evening meetings at 5:30.
How many members are there?
Oh, let's see. Active members would probably say about 20, but on the rolls, I believe it's somewhere around 45 to 50. You'll have some that join, and of course, come wintertime, there's like some people, they're snowbirds and they're gone.
Right.
So. We see them in the summer more so.
Yeah. You're actually the parent organization, this whole thing is actually AARP, right?
Well, we're connected with AARP and do a lot of activities, some activities with AARP dealing with, if you want to say, retired people, insurance, legislation locally here and what have you. Yes.
Do I understand correctly that if you're an AARP member, then you're automatically a member of the Juneau REA?
Well, there's still that... $10, I believe.
Okay, so you're a member of the National Retired Teachers Association, but there is a local membership, right. So you guys can have activities and that sort of thing. All right. You going to let him do all the talking? Or?
He's doing a good job.
They got the next question.
Yeah. So I guess, Mike, one of the things is there's a debate going on right now, a legislative debate, about the fact that the school board may have to add the retirement monies to their budget. Are you involved in any of those discussions as an organization?
That was the first time I've heard about that, but that's something that's going on around the nation is they have to put on their health care costs and their retirement costs and show those on their books. So. But I hadn't heard about it happening.
Yeah, I don't think the sword falls right away. I think it's like it's projected out a couple of years in budgeting, but they're already having discussions about it. I was hearing news stories last week or earlier this week about the fact that evidently the school board will have to show those things on their balance sheet, which they were talking about. Man, that's a big number. There's a lot of retired teachers, and the teachers' retirement program, the TRS, has been extremely beneficial, I think, to retirees, similar to the PERS retirement program.
It's been adequate.
Of course, it's changed now. Like the three of us were under Tier 1. I know you're very familiar tier. But for teachers now, those in education more or less have to start their own investment. We fall under the Tier 1 thing, which is very nice.
Yeah.
I wish it could continue, but... for those coming after us, but now I know the legislators are looking at it again.
I think a secondary effect of those generous retirement programs has been that our senior population in Juneau and Southeast Alaska, well, Juneau particularly, but Southeast Alaska to a lesser extent, our senior population is bumping up, and so we've become a kind of a retirement area. Yeah. with a lot of people who snowbird like you're talking about.
You know, people but, used to move south.
Yeah, yeah.
These
now they hold their house
here.
Here.
So high,
yeah.
It's much better to move south.
Yeah, but with tier one retirement or with a decent pension from education, you can actually consider staying here. And there are really I run this show 2 days a week, and the number of cultural activities and opportunities to do things in Juneau, Alaska, just overwhelms me. I have four people every time I do this show, all of whom are offering wonderful things that we can do. More than I think most other small communities, certainly more than another community of with our population of about 32,000 would have.
There are many of the retired teachers that may leave in the winter, come and back in the summer, do work, volunteer on the tourism, the museum, and things like that when they're up here. I've been driving tour bus here for years, and I see a few of them around town at the booth, at the museum.
So you never actually quit teaching. Because that's certainly a teaching position from the front seat of that tour bus.
As a matter of fact, I just drove today, but there's some students to the high school.
I was a naturalist at the Glacier for 17 summers.
What did you teach when you were
Eighth
grade science,
and math.
Well, I'd put you in that position to be able to do that.
Well, also I'm a graduate forester, too.
Oh, okay. And what was your teaching specialty?
General math and job placement in science. I worked with a special educational program they had here for 30 years.
Save me here, Patterson. Surely you taught in the liberal arts.
No. I taught elementary school at Auk Bay, fifth grade and second grade, sixth grade.
So you're a vast generalist. We can get away with these two scientists. We can walk.
Well, no, I'm an expert on everything.
Good one, Jerry.
you guys are friends.
I'm beginning
to get that.
We've known each other for years.
Fortunate organization.
Oh, yeah. That was where I was going with that. You must be fairly small. I mean, how many with 45 to 50 members, but probably 20% of that attending one of your events. Yeah. You're talking about just a nice little group of people who can sit around and talk.
A lot of fun.
Yeah.
There's a number of things we have done in the. I've helped out on the even local teachers on scholarships. We've had retired teachers work at the election in August or October, November there. And I mentioned in the tourism, Christmas time, it's the sock drive we have. The members bring in and we bring down to the glory hole.
Clean up the highways.
By Jerry at Mile.
23
retired teachers area for activity. Not that we do all of these in 1 year, but these are things we've been involved in.
As a teacher is approaching retirement, how do they find out that your organization exists and they can become members of it?
Hopefully they're listening today, but they're in the classroom. When they do retire, a lot of times we've sent letters out, and word of mouth, Jerry, would it be too?
I think they're pretty much aware of us. They're especially aware that on the first day of school, we have our back-to-school party. And toast all the teachers at 9 o'clock and say, thank God we're not there.
Spoken like a true gentleman.
That's right.
And our meeting is posted on page 2 of the local newspaper, that third Monday, where we're at. So, I mean, if they read that, I know there's usually, which is surprising for Julie, there's usually about 15 activities going on every day somewhere, as you had mentioned, cultural, educational, sports, or what have you.
Let me stick an oar in here. We share a community calendar with the Jack, and you would be more than welcome to post on the KTOOJA, the Arts and Culture Center.
Sure.
The street from us. They run a community calendar online, and we normally read it every Friday in here. As part of on Thursday afternoons, they send someone over to, usually it's Nancy DeCherney, comes over and reads through the events that are coming up for the week. So here's another venue that you could easily get the word out about events that you're planning to do.
Thank you.
Well, gents, thank you so much for telling us about this thing. I'm sure that very few teachers who are actively in the classroom are listening to us right now because 3 o'clock is not the slot. However, there is hope. We stream this show and we archive it. So the show will be available after, about a half hour after I get off the air at 4 o'clock. I will have it posted up on our website so people can get to it in that fashion.
Bye, Liz. Bye, Marie, darling. I think you were listening, you told me.
So if someone wanted to contact you, how would they do it?
To be a member, they can call my wife, Denise Carroll, 586-6115.
Okay, good enough. Anytime. Well, thank you very much for telling us about the organization.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 25th of January, 2013. It's the birthday of Somerset Maugham, born in Paris, 1874. His father was in Paris as a lawyer for the British Embassy. When the boy was 8, his mother died from tuberculosis. His father died of cancer 2 years later. The boy was sent back to England into the care of a cold, distant uncle, a vicar. Maugham was miserable at his school. He said later, "I wasn't even likable as a boy. I was withdrawn and unhappy." He became a doctor, and he practiced in the London slums. He was particularly moved by the women he encountered in the hospital where he delivered babies, and he was shocked by his fellow doctors' callous approach to the poor. He wrote, "I saw how men died. I saw how they bore pain. I saw what hope looked like, fear and relief. I saw the dark lines that despair drew on a face. I saw courage and steadfastness. I saw the gallantry that made a man greet the prognosis of death with an ironic joke because he was too proud to let those about him see the terror of his soul." When he was 23, Somerset Maugham published his first novel, Liza of Lambeth, about a working-class 18-year-old named Liza who has an affair with a 40-year-old married man named Jim, a father of 9. Jim's wife beats up Liza, who's pregnant and who miscarries and dies. The novel was a big success. Maugham made enough money to quit medicine, become a full-time writer. For many years, he made his living as a playwright, but eventually he became one of the most popular novelists in Britain. Novels including Of Human Bondage, The Moon and Sixpence, Cakes and Ale, and The Razor's Edge. Somerset Maugham, who said, "To acquire the habit of reading is to construct for yourself a refuge from almost all the miseries of life." Here's a poem for today, a poem by Thomas Lux, entitled Dead Horse. At the fence line, I was about to call him in, when, at 2/3 profile, head low and away from me, he fell first to his right front knee and then the left, and he was down, dead, before he hit. My father saw him drop, too, and a neighbor who walked over. He was a good horse, old, spavined, eating grass during the day and his oats and hay at night. He didn't mind or try to boss the cows with which he shared these acres. My father said, "Happens." Our neighbor, named Malcolm, walked back to his place and soon grinding toward us with his tractor's new backhoe, of which he was proud, but so far used only to dig 2 sump holes. It was the knacker who'd haul away a cow, a horse, a good horse, you buried where he or she fell. Malcolm cut a trench beside the horse, and we pushed him in. I'd already said goodbye before I tried to close his eyes. Our neighbor returned the dirt from where it came, in its stones, stones never seen before by humans nor even a worm's eye. With the back of a shovel, we tamped the dirt down. 1 dumb cow stood by. It was a Friday. For supper, we ate hot dogs with beans on buttered white bread. Every Friday, hot dogs and beans. A poem by Thomas Lux, Dead Horse, from his collection Child, Made of Sand, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
27 minutes before 4 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News. We're in Juneau, Alaska. We're in the middle of Juneau afternoon, and my next guest is here to tell us about an event which is coming up, I think, very shortly here.
Yeah,
right?
It's Project Homeless Connect on Monday, the 28th.
This is Jessie Post. She's here from the Juneau Economic Development Commission, and I think you're a liaison between them and another organization that's actually sponsoring this event, right?
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for having me, Pat. Through a contract with the city and the Juneau Economic Development Council, I serve as the Juneau Homeless Coalition coordinator, and the Juneau Homeless Coalition is holding this event on Monday, the 28th, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Centennial Hall and the Juneau Arts and Culture Center.
You know, there was another event several months ago that kind of is related similarly to this. It was called a stand down for vets. And a whole bunch of veterans were invited to Centennial Hall for the purpose of making contact with people who could help them get their veterans benefits. And this is kind of like the same thing. You're inviting people who need assistance because they're homeless to come and get assistance from you, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Project Homeless Connect has a much bigger scope, though, because they're helping anyone who's experiencing homelessness, and including veterans. But it's a really dynamic event because we have such a variety of service providers. There's a lot of interactions going on, and we have anywhere from veteran affairs to healthcare services such as blood pressure screenings and foot care. People can obtain birth certificates. The vital statistics will be there to help assist with that. So there really is quite a variety of services that will be available at Centennial Hall and the JAC.
I'm not sure people know how big the scope of this problem is, but largely as a result of a very underbuilt housing market in Juneau, we have about 570 or 580 people who are considered homeless. That includes, I think, a certain number of teenagers who are couch surfing, who may not be sleeping. And most of those people, I don't think, are sleeping on the street at night, but many of them are.
Yeah, and a big component of Project Homeless Connect is collecting data. It coincides with the annual point-in-time count, which helps us collect data on the homeless population. You are right. We see some youth at this event. We see a variety of age groups and different demographics at Project Homeless Connect. And the 2012 point-in-time count indicated that we had 562 homeless in our community. So, and last year at Project Homeless Connect, we saw 187 people come through Project Homeless Connect last year, so it's been we've been seeing more and more people at every event each year.
I think something like two-thirds of these are male, according to your figures from last year, and about two-thirds of them are Alaska Natives. So the biggest numbers are in those two categories. Is that your experience?
Yeah, we have seen. The survey does capture, asks about 15 questions about, just the general questions, gender and ethnicity, but the main question is asking where they slept. It will be for the night of January 27th. And you had mentioned couch surfing before this, and there are many people that aren't necessarily sleeping, outside in the environment, but they are, they don't have a stable environment. So that couch surfing and living with friends or relatives does fall under the category of, you know, experiencing homelessness.
Jesse, if someone comes to this event, what you said they can receive some services, which I thought the most wonderful of those would be foot care. If you're if you're homeless, you're walking a lot.
Yes.
What other assistance do you try to connect them up to?
Well, I mean, just obviously, even some basic services, like there are meals available. The Glory Hole is providing a hot meal, cold breakfast, snacks throughout the day, and beverages, coffee. And then also, like I had said, other healthcare services, you know, that people can come in and get a flu shot and other immunizations. Let's see, there will be housing providers on hand to help. Last year, we were able to help several families get immediate housing and several several individuals with eviction funds. So there are immediate results for some people, and definitely direct services. United Way has been collecting donations, and I know they've gotten quite a bit so far in the last week. They're collecting winter items like coats and mittens and hats and everything down to, you know, toiletries. And those are things that people can come into Project Homeless Connect and take with them. So really a lot of great resources in one spot.
You mentioned breakfast and lunch. What time are you opening the doors?
Doors open at 9 a.m., and we definitely in the past have seen that it's definitely busiest when you open the doors till about lunchtime. It's a busy place.
with a potential 500 or 600 people who may need to take advantage of your services, I can see where you're going to be really busy for a few hours there.
Yes.
Yeah, how did you described yourself as a coordinator? Bringing all of these things together must really be a complex task.
It is, and I like I had said, this is my first experience with Project Homeless Connect, but I've had the chance to work with many wonderful people on a planning committee, mostly made up of members from the Juneau Homeless Coalition, and they are veterans of Project Homeless Connect, so. You know, I've been working on the overall coordination, but I mean, I really have had tons of help, and definitely wouldn't be possible without multiple team leaders here taking on different aspects of Project Homeless Connect.
You do the survey, and you have these data that come out of the survey that talk about the numbers of peoples in various categories and like that. What do you do with that data?
That data, and like I said, that's only, it's the overall point in time count. And so Project Homeless Connect only has, is only providing a portion of that overall 500 plus number that when we're talking about that. And that number or that data collection, gets input into a data system and with other service providers and the Juneau School District and emergency shelters, they're also doing this point-in-time count, and that's where we come up with that larger 500-plus number for our homeless population in our community.
So then I know the Juneau housing market analysis that the Juneau housing needs assessment just came out based on 2012 figures published by JEDC. And they're recommending at the end of that a number of houses that would need to be built in order to bring the community to this magic 5% vacancy rate that they talk about being where we would be a healthy community as far as our housing needs go. I guess that my sense is that we have a lot of facts here, but I don't know how we get the action to happen.
Yeah, all of this data is great, but we need to use all of this information and present it, you know, to our legislature. You know, use it for policymaking and for advocacy to help. Help us obtain more housing in Juneau because there's, you know, there's a demand of housing, and it's, you know, not just affecting the homeless population. It's, you know, different targets, different people need different types of housing in Juneau, as everybody seems to know.
Yeah, the demand is not for $250,000 three-bedroom houses.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a much different demand, and we need more of a sense of what that is. But we also need to move towards something. And I think I've heard discussion now ever since I moved to Juneau 8 years ago, which doesn't seem to have resulted in any solution to the housing crisis that really is a crisis in Juneau. Particularly, you know it's a crisis if you're sleeping on the street tonight.
Yeah, exactly. So Project Homeless Connect, again, you know, collecting this data is important to help us, you know, help create more housing within Juneau and help people get off the streets here.
You bet. Okay, Project Homeless Connect starts at 9 o'clock on, what'd you say, Monday?
Monday,
yeah. 9 o'clock Monday morning. It's at Centennial Hall. The doors open up. There, of course, is no charge for this, and the whole concept is that if you are homeless or if you know someone who is homeless and needs assistance, steer them to this thing or come yourself and walk in the door. Breakfast, a lunch, and a bunch of people who are willing to help. Thank you. Thanks for letting us know that this event is coming up.
Yeah, thanks, Pat.
Watch the neighbor's dreams away, and we have seen. years, it'll stand 100 more, I'm sure.
Took me by surprise. My guest is Patrick Murphy, and he's going to be playing at the Rookery on Saturday night. What time you start?
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. All right.
Yep.
So, is that? Am I hearing? I haven't heard much of your music before. Am I hearing a typical piece of yours, or do you have?
Maybe
a,
like I have. I do some ballads and waltzes, and I do some rockers. I write most. I'm going to do a few covers, but it's mostly original music. I don't know. I'm a Flatlander. I'm from Iowa, so mm-hmm. I think a lot of my songs kind of have a twang and a root to them.
Yeah, okay. Good. Well, we only had the few minutes for music and to let people know about the concert. So it's coming up at 8 o'clock on Saturday night. You're at the Rookery. Thank you so much
for
dropping
for
in and
me.
Letting us have a little side sample and letting people know it's coming up.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
In the main performance space at Valley Performing Arts, a large group of kids practice reading their lines and dancing to music at center stage. They're all here for the VPA Summer Theater Arts Program. 17-year-old Alora Zulliger knows a lot about that. Not only is she a performer with Valley Performing Arts, she's also a volunteer assistant director for one of the summer sessions.
I think that a lot of what it's about is kids being able to have fun and meet new friends and just have this positive experience where they can get their feet wet in theater without having to do a month-long performance run with several months of rehearsal. A lot of the kids come and they're very shy and they're very quiet, and over the course of 2 weeks of having lots of fun and being super silly, they sort of come away having had a great time and also having learned to be more confident and that they feel like they've accomplished something. So it's really fun to see that in all of those kids.
Alora herself has been involved with Valley Performing Arts since she was 10. She's been a part of many performances and acted in lead roles and supporting roles both.
I love performing because I like taking myself out of my reality, which is good, and putting myself into somebody else's shoes and seeing if I can try to be them for a couple of hours.
In addition to performing and her work with the summer program, Alora also volunteers sometimes as an usher for VPA performances as yet another way to help out. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Alaska State Division of Behavioral Health.
It's 13 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My next guest comes to us by telephone from Anchorage. She is with Pick, Click, and Give. Heather Beatty's here. Hi, Heather.
Hi, how are you today?
Pretty good. What's your weather like up there?
It's sunny and cold and beautiful today.
Oh, I hate you.
How's Juneau?
Well, like Juneau. We had patchy fog, and tonight it's supposed to snow a couple of inches out in the valley. So, anyway, winter down here. So tell us about the status of Pick, Click, and Give. I think the publicity is wonderful. I know that a lot of money is coming in. Where are we standing?
Well, we recently broke the $1 million mark over the past weekend. So the total as of 6 a.m. this morning is $1,077,000. And that's really exciting. We hit the $1 million mark faster than we ever had in history. So we're very glad to see Alaskans once again exercising their spirit of generosity and sharing a little bit of their permanent fund dividends with the causes they care about.
Because the permanent fund dividend is totally unique, I don't think there's another program in another state quite like this, is there?
No, this is absolutely a uniquely Alaskan opportunity.
Who had the idea?
I believe the idea came from within the Rasmussen Foundation and was supported by many of the partner agencies. Right now, the four main partners that are behind the program are the Rasmussen Foundation, the Alaska Community Foundation, the United Way of Anchorage, and the Foraker Group.
So, you know, for years there have been people, including me, who felt a little bit guilty about getting this little bump for which you do essentially nothing. And I think you've provided the perfect way for us to expiate that slight tingle of guilt.
I hear that from people pretty often, actually. The reasons that people choose to give, you know, differ from person to person. Some folks approach it from that angle. Others are just very passionate about certain causes and very excited to have an easy, safe, convenient way to make a contribution.
What's the administrative cost look like?
I don't have those exact figures in front of me, but they're kept very low in a couple of ways. First of all, this is actually only available to those who file for their PFDs online. That's to ensure accuracy and also to keep the cost of the program as low as possible. And the entire cost of the program are actually covered by a small fee that each nonprofit pays during the application process. So they pay a $250 fee, and those fees cover the cost of the program so that when you or I go online and make a pick-click-give contribution, 100% of that money goes directly to the nonprofit of our choice.
Outstanding. So this is, when you said safe, that was what kind of twigged me, because I know that there are many organizations that I could give money to, and I don't, because I know that they're taking such a portion of it for administrative costs.
And the safety feature is definitely that this is all administered through the State of Alaska's website where you file for your PFD. So it's a very secure process, and you can rest assured that the funds are going directly to the organization that you're choosing.
Do a lot of people give their whole PFD?
I actually don't have numbers on that. That's a really interesting question. Anecdotally, sure, we hear from a lot of folks who choose to give that much, but we also hear from a lot of people who make a more modest contribution of $25 or $50.
And you hardly would even feel that coming out of your PFD, would you?
That's what most people say. They don't even notice. And personally, I've found that no matter what you're giving, you still get that really special feeling that you get when you do something good. Giving $25 can be just as meaningful as giving $250.
Do you receive, if you do this, do you receive some notice that you've done it?
Yes. You basically receive like an email receipt letting you know where your contributions went, reminding you of that, and then that's what you can use when you file your taxes if you choose to claim those charitable deductions.
When you go on the website, how do you know, how does the list come up?
You can search the list on the state's website a couple of different ways. They have a way of narrowing it down by zip code or by the name of your city. You can also just type in the first couple of words of the name of the organization that you want to support, and it will search the list in that way as well.
Is it sophisticated enough that if you wanted to give support to a concept, could you search it that way or not?
What I'd recommend you do, if that's what you're interested in doing, is actually visit the PickClickGive website, which is separate from the state's PFD application site. And on pickclickgive.org, you can search by cause type. So if you're interested in helping, say, families who have suffered from domestic violence or rescuing pets, you could certainly go to our website and look through that lens and see all of the organizations that are on the list who are serving that particular cause.
And then from there, is it possible to link out, for instance, if you see an organization that is working in the area that you want to support, can you get to their website so you can kind of sense who they are?
Absolutely. Each organization has a profile page on PickClickGive.org. So you can take a closer look at what their mission is. The organizations have been encouraged to share with Alaskans some stories about what the PickClickGive contributions have accomplished. And there's also a neat feature on our website where Alaskans can leave a short story about what motivates them to donate so that they can help inspire other Alaskans to pick, click, and give.
This is a wonderful program, which I'm sure I know from what you've said is totally unique. It's a wonderful opportunity for Alaskans to really open their hearts up to the rest of Alaska. Heather, thank you so much for the work you do, and thank you so much for telling us about the program.
Thank you. Have a great afternoon.
Yeah, bye now.
Bye.
You're in tune with KTOO Juno. We broadcast on 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas, and we're also broadcasting on a set of translators throughout the area. Our signal is clarified in the valley in Auk Bay by tuning to K276AF. That's at 103.1. In Lemon and Slitzer Creek, you hear us at 101.7 on K269AO. Gustavus hears us on 88.1, K201AM. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Straits, you can hear KTOO on K210AS at 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN is on digital channel 872. KXLL is on 873. And we stream continuously at www.ktoo.org. We've had a wonderful time today on Juneau Afternoon. I've really enjoyed bringing you along with me as we've interviewed Phil Paramore about John Elliott's concert out at the campus. The folks from the Juneau Retired Teachers Association, Jesse Post telling us about Homeless Connect coming up on Monday, Pat Murphy's Saturday concert at the Rookery, and lastly, Heather Beatty with the Pick Click Give program. On Monday, you'll hear Joan Pardis at this microphone, and she'll be talking with the Capital City Fire and Rescue folks. Chief Richard Etheridge is coming by. Catherine Kell will be here highlighting a new book and movie discussion group she's starting. Details about this week's screening of Warren Miller's new film, Flow State, and we'll celebrate Big Brothers and Big Sisters with Biggs Pete and Sandy Metcalf. So stay tuned to KTOO and listen to Juneau Afternoon on Monday when Joan Pardis is your host.